Good evening, everybody. This is Thursday, November 19th, and I'm going to call to order the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting. If you could do the roll call, Ms. Montez.
Here.
Member. Okay. Here. Member Akita.
Here.
There we go.
The first item is for any public comment on items that are not on the agenda. And seeing none, we'll move to third item, which is the approval of the meeting minutes of September 17th, 2015. Any questions or comments from committee members?
I just had a brief comment on the second page at the top, talking about the stream gauge data that Salmon Enhancement and Steph talked about last time. She says that the stream gauge data would continue to be shared with the county. Doesn't the county own that, or wouldn't the county own that stream gauge? So it would be vice versa, where the county would share that data with the Salmon Enhancement? I'm not sure, but she's not here.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Maybe Jill Ogren would know that, but I know that they're the ones that are collecting that data, so maybe they're sharing the data with us.
Jill Ogren, County Public Works. Yeah, we have had the historical data at that gauging station, but when they do their project, they are part of the project is to put in a new stream gauge, so they're doing a new model, so to speak, for the creek there. So they would, from that point on, because as part of their grant funding, I believe they have to do some monitoring, and so that's the data that we would continue to share.
I'm sorry, my question would be, who will actually own the stream gauge?
A county.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Jill, any other questions or comments on the minutes? Any public comment on the minutes? And seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for approval.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Barnick and seconded by Committee Member Wallace. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And hearing none, the motion passes.
And I abstained.
Mr. Gehring abstained?
I did. I missed the last
one. Thank you. Item four, then, is approval of the 2016 meeting schedule.
Okay. That would be me. Okay. Sorry, I'm just having trouble with this. Okay. If you would turn to page 8. What I've done is I've kept the schedule as is, so the rotation schedule remains the same, and the only thing that has changed are the dates.
Very good. Any questions? Any public comment? Nope. Mr. Gehring.
I'm just wondering if we can get a contact list for everybody on the staff and the members that's current. I've got one, but mine still has Ron Coleman on it. So,
okay.
I can do that. I can either email that to you before the next meeting, or I can bring it back in January.
Yeah, I think as soon as you get it done, if you could just email it out to
okay.
everybody, I think
sure.
that would be great.
We have that.
Thank you. Any further questions? And I'll entertain a motion for approval of the 2016 meeting schedule.
So move.
Second.
I think we have a unanimous on the on the motion. So, Ms. Montez, you can take your pick on who made the motion.
Okay.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. And motion passes. So we're moving along quite well right here. Item number 5, operations report. And Mr. Phillips is here.
Good evening. My name is Joe Phillips. I work with Lopez Water Treatment Plant for the County of San Luis Obispo. Here's the operations report for Lopez facility. The lake elevation was 467.38 feet, or storage capacity in acre feet are 14,399. Our capacity is 29%. Rainfall to date is 2.7 inches. Our plant production right now is about 3.53 million gallons per day. Our filter turbidity range is 0.02. Terminal reservoir visibility is about 9 feet, which is very good. Downstream release, million gallons per day, is 5.1 million gallons. Was turned down today, too, by the way.
Any questions for Mr. Phillips?
Did you say the capacity is 29%?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
So we dropped below the 15,000, which I think we were all anticipating doing, part of why we are having the 10% cutback. Do we have any projections yet on where we might sit later in the winter on reservoir levels? All right. Maybe for the January meeting we can come back and get some projections on where the reservoir levels might be underneath. We had one from September. So just an update to that on where we might be if we're getting rain or if we don't get rain.
Would that be for the month of January and February that you're looking for?
Previously what's been done is just basically projecting out through the year, depending on what kind of rainfall scenarios we might get.
Okay, sounds like Jill has it. Okay, great.
I was just curious about when we would be projected to hit 10,000 acre feet, because that's our next trigger under the LRRP, and what the likelihood might be there.
So in front of me, I have our Lopez Reservoir storage projection, which was given to the TAC group. When was that? What month? Beginning of November. And without, if we were not to get any more rain and to stay on the same track as we have for the previous 3 years, it looks like 10,000 would happen in August of 2016.
Okay, and that's assuming we don't get much winter rain then.
That's as if we had the same scenario that we've had in the last 3 years, basically.
I guess my request would be for a Zone 3 Advisory Committee in the future, if we could just get as part of the normal package those projections so that we can monitor it as the winter goes by and see how things go. So that was all. Thank you. Any other questions on operations? And anticipating no public comment, no action item on this one. Next item, 6, first quarter budget status report. Ms. Hilker, welcome.
Good evening. I'm Joanne Hilker from the Public Works Finance Division, and I'm here to report the first quarter budget status report for Flood Control Zone 3. In your packets is the fiscal year 2015-16 first quarter report. In total, Flood Control Zone 3, the total expenses were 16% under budget for the quarter. In the packet, there are 3 graphs reflecting the first quarter budget versus actual expenditures in the following 3 categories. The first category displays the routine operations and maintenance. So at 25% of the way through the fiscal year, the actual expenditures were about 20% of budget, which resulted in about $174,000 of savings. And that the savings were primarily in labor, due to staff vacancies, which are currently in the process of being filled. The second graph shows non-routine operations and maintenance, and at 25% of the way through the fiscal year, the actual expenditures were approximately 9% of budget, resulting in $107,000 of savings. Those savings primarily occurred in the habitat conservation planning efforts and are further described in the quarterly report. And the third graph represents capital outlay. Again, at 25% of the way through the year, the actual expenses were about 20% of budget, resulting in $36,000 of savings. And that occurred primarily in the water treatment plant resurface parking lot project. And Jill Ogren is here to provide a status update on that project as well as the other projects. I'd also like to just mention that the final billing adjustments for fiscal year 14-15, along with the fiscal year 15-16 second installment invoices, will be mailed out to your agencies tomorrow. And the fiscal year 14-15 ended with a total of 36,000 of credits back to the agencies, which are included in the billing packages to be mailed out tomorrow. That concludes my report. If you have any questions.
Any questions from the committee? Yes.
Thank you. I don't know. I can't seem to hear this evening. What was the amount of that's going back to the agencies?
A total of 36,000.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And that's distributed on the basis of entitlement?
It is. This year, it's distributed on the basis of actual deliveries, both for Lopez and state.
Any other questions from committee members? And this is also received and filed, so no action necessary. And I don't see anybody from the public jumping up to comment. So thank you, Ms. Hilker. Item number 7 is informational items. The first one, 7A, is on the climate update.
Okay, so that would be me moving right along. So as you can see on page 14 of your packets, not a whole lot has changed since we last met in regards to the drought. We're still in an exceptional drought. But on the next page, in regard to the temperature, there's been just a slight change. You can see that back in September, we had above average to normal temperatures, and it looks like for this month, we have more of a mixture. So it's kind of anything goes, and I think we've seen that just in the past week here. And for the precipitation on page 16, again, September, it was kind of a combination. And it looks like for November, they're just throwing their hands up in the air, and it's kind of a crap shot there. So a little bit of everything. But since we last met, I had an opportunity to attend a winter weather conference in Oxnard at the National Weather Service. And then also my colleague Doug Bird, who's here tonight, and I, we listened in on a phone conference yesterday with CSAC, the California State Association of Counties. So I have a little bit of information to share on those conferences. I was hoping to share a YouTube video with you this evening, but it doesn't look like we have internet connection. But I do have a couple of slides, so I'll go ahead and pull those up. Okay, so this is from yesterday's CSAC phone conference, and there's a PowerPoint presentation that's has more slides than what I'm showing you tonight, and that's at storms.california.gov, and there's a whole lot of other information on that website as well. So Joanne asked earlier tonight about the red off of the coast. So there's that blob that we've heard about. And with this blob comes an increase in the sea levels. So our sea levels are expected to rise next week during Thanksgiving. And then as you may have heard, we have a slight chance of rain. So depending on how that rain goes combined with the sea levels, that just might be something that I know that Utilities Division will be monitoring. So this is a slide of a typical El Nino storm season, or year, I should say. And so you can see that the wet weather that's shown on this slide is mostly directed towards Southern California, going to the east. So where we're located, there's really not a whole lot of that wet weather that's being forecasted at the moment. And these slides are interesting because we've heard lately that we're going to see the majority of our wet weather perhaps in November, December, January. And it looks like the more recent forecasts are showing that that weather might actually come a little bit later. So maybe we aren't going to see it in November, December, January. Maybe it'd be more like January, February, March. And again, here's just kind of what we just went over in the packet in regards to our temperatures. But you can see the graph on the right-hand side, which represents February, March, and April. It looks like the outlook for rain is much higher there than it is in February, March, and April. And this graph shows the historical rainfall during typical El Niño winter. So back in 1997-98, we can see that it peaked in February. And if you compare where we're at now, which is that black line, we're already above the previous El Niños in regards to the rainfall, or excuse me, the water levels, sea levels. And then here's a calendar of the high tides. So I mentioned earlier that next week during the Thanksgiving holidays, we're going to have some high tides. And it again occurs during Christmas. So we'll see if we get any rain during that time. And this is where we started. So there's that website for you again. So that's pretty much my weather forecast. Do you have any questions?
Any questions from the committee? And from the public, and seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Montez.
You're welcome.
What did you characterize that at the beginning of your discussion? Some sort of a shoot? Crapshoot? Crapshoot. Yep. At least you're an honest meteorologist. The next update is the PG&E Diablo Canyon Power Plant Desalination Update. Looks like Ms. Ogren will be providing us with...
I'm actually here on behalf of John Waddell, who's the project manager who's going to be looking into the desal options using PG&E Diablo's desalinization plant. So he provided what you have in front of you. I do know that I talked to John shortly before we came, before I came to the meeting, and he didn't really have any further update than what you have in front of you. So I'm sort of, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to either take them back to John or do what I can to answer. I do know one thing is that we will be bringing a big desal update back to the board on January 26th.
Has that date with the Board of Supervisors been confirmed then?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Jill. Any questions?
I just want to make a comment. I did take a tour of the desal plant today and had a discussion with PG&E, gave the tour on their side of the thing. Of course, the county, as I understand, the county would basically own the pipe, transport the water if it goes through. Diablo Canyon contractor, GE contractor, would provide the water, and then we would presumably work a deal with the county on our share of it, depending if we decide to move forward on it. But looks to me like it is entirely feasible from the what I was able to tell today. Thank you.
On the second bullet, the amount of water supply is expected to be from 500 to 1,300 acre feet per year. Is that, I thought it was going to be more than that. It never was?
No, I believe that they generate just as existing right now is like 30 acre feet a month, but they have the ability to expand, and that's how we would get up to these quantities here. And that, so the 500 to 1300 is a per year,
right?
And the other number I quoted was a per month,
right? Okay,
and I had been hearing 1,000 acre feet roughly, so these numbers are consistent with what I had generally been hearing.
I don't know where I heard that. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Any other committee questions?
Jill, I had a question on the third bullet down about a letter has been sent to all the agencies. Have you received confirmation and from whom about their interest?
I do not know. I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't know what agencies have responded yet.
Okay. AG has responded. At our last meeting, we voted unanimously to send a letter of interest. We all had a lot of questions, of course, but this was just sort of, yes, we're interested, and we'd like to know more.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm just going to comment on Pismo Beach. Our city manager talked to the county administrative officer, Dan Buckshy, and basically said it seemed more appropriate to have a city manager express interest rather than have a formal resolution at this time until we have more information. I mentioned it's feasible, but we don't know what the cost is and delivery, and it takes time to get through the EIR and everything. So there's a lot of unknowns at this point. Until we know those, I don't think we wanted to go on formal record as a body to say, yeah, we want to do it.
And for Oceano, our board considered it several meetings ago, and similarly, they were supportive of the county's efforts to evaluate it, but really need to hold off on any formal decision until we see costs and, you know, how the details would work out. You know, on that point, I'm assuming all the costs are being paid for by the county right now in terms of this evaluation and everything, and no matter how it pans out, you know, I think it would be important for this committee to make sure to thank the Board of Supervisors for their expenditures and their work on this particular item. And our next meeting is January 21st. So my hope is that Public Works can come and provide us with, you know, essentially the same presentation that's going to be provided to the Board of Supervisors on the following Tuesday. You know, it's one of those interesting issues where each of the agencies is going to have to look at the project and what's being proposed and decide whether or not they want to participate in the project. And yet, collectively, as Zone 3, this advisory committee also has a role in terms of if our agencies want to support it, to make sure to, you know, also come out and speak on the project. So it's my hope that Public Works can come and at our next meeting and, you know, essentially provide the same presentation that's going to be provided to the Board of Supervisors so that we have the benefit of that. And
you can request that.
Any other questions or comments? And seeing no public, thanks again, Jill. Imagine you're still up there for item 8, the capital projects update.
Yeah, I decided I'm just not going to sit down again. So in front of you, hopefully you have the memorandum from Eric Laurie, our project manager. And the update on the 6 rec addition I'm going to hold off on because part of that is another item in front of you as a budget adjustment. So I'll talk a little bit about that under that item. The Turnout SCADA project is underway. They have done the panel construction, and currently we are working on coordination of actually at each of the turnouts where the SCADA is going. We've run into a couple, some pieces of equipment is a little out of date, and so we've got to make some modifications there, but that's all going along and we're coordinating. So it's moving. The project is still moving forward. So let's see. As far as the equipment audit and replacement program, we are working on a plan to basically it's a long-term plan to replace certain pieces of equipment. The variable frequency variable frequency drives, which are pump controllers, they're planned to be replaced, but we won't be replacing them until they fail. So we're not really moving forward on that until, you know, something happens that spurs that on. Let's see. The power monitoring project is currently on hold because we're waiting to see how this equipment works on the Nacimiento project before we move forward on it here. And they're a little further ahead in the process, so we're checking that out and kind of want to do some testing using the NACI project first. The Lopez Dam repair the V-ditch, which was something that was identified in a Division of Safety of Dams inspection. We plan to do it this year. We're just a little shorthanded. We believe we can do it with county forces, although right now we're a little thin. So I believe Joe knows a little bit more about this. Did I say that correct? Okay. It will happen this year, one way or the other. Is it a large project?
No, it's just going to take some construction.
Okay. The water treatment plant resurfacing parking lot, that's scheduled in with all the other county road resurfacing projects, so it'll be done at that time, which I do not know. I'm guessing it's probably happening in April or May, somewhere around there, probably after, for sure after the rainy season. And let's see, water treatment plant intake repair. Joe, do you want to say something about that? Do you know where we're at? And that's all I have. Any other questions? Or any questions?
Any questions from the committee?
I just had a question. You mentioned the variable frequency drive project. Mm-hmm. You let that pump go until it fails. Is the TAC comfortable with that? I'm just wondering why you would wait until something failed. Does that mean it'll be offline until you can get it repaired?
The pumps that are in there are outdated.
Right.
So it's not a matter of going in there and just repairing them or making them work. They'll actually, so then when one of them is, if when one fails, then we will buy similar ones for all the others, and then we'll have the same model moving forward. Right now, there's no reason to replace them.
And they are redundant, so you have more, if one fails, the other one will continue to operate.
And they are functioning. We don't know when they're, we just know they're outdated. They're the kind of thing that you can't get parts for to repair. So we just wait till they fail.
It would be a large interruption in service if this fails. Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
Joe says no.
Okay. Thank you. Right. So you'll have some capacity if you have a failure, and then at that point you replace everything. Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the committee? Mr. Goering?
Actually for Joe, that the V-ditch, Joe, that's the one that's been coming down piece by piece from way above the roadway there?
Yeah, you know, Jim, that, we had one 2 years ago we made a repair on some of the underdrain system up on the right of us. The right of us, and we had made that repair, and we packed everything back, and continued to V-ditch so that it wouldn't under that and wash out. So this other one is on the left side, looking down from the top.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and what it has done is it shifted to them. So you imagine a piece being this long, well, maybe it's 40 feet long, like about a 11, 12 foot piece dropping. So when water goes, it's still continuing down its normal path, but when it gets to the bottom, then it's got that, the bottom side is higher than the upper side. So it's done it. So we've made part of that. Yes, we're going to try to get that.
Okay, thank you.
So my only question is, it says that the construction on the sixth rack was going to start yesterday. Is that all going, or?
Yes, that was, we anticipate, actually I thought that we had changed it to Monday. They were supposed to have a pre-construction meeting today, I believe, with our resident engineer, and they're going to start constructing it.
Good. That'll be a great addition. Any other questions on the capital projects update? Seeing none, we'll keep moving right along then to our action items. 9A, Lopez Water Treatment Plant, 6th Rack Budget Transfer.
So, the original project was $858,000, and we are currently needing another $100,000 for the sixth rack project, in part due to about $43,000 in, I believe it was sales tax that was not taken into consideration. So that was a big chunk. The other part of it was some of the delays that we experienced during design and the fact that we've had to store the equipment for 5 months while we kind of got things worked out. So those are the reasons. So what we're doing is we're taking the $100,000 from our pigging project, which we actually had two different accounts set up for pigging, so we've combined those, and that's where we'll be taking the $100,000 from, if you approve it. Or if you recommend approval.
And from the staff report, it appears that the TAC has looked at this and the effect of the overall capital outlay plan and is recommending the budget transfer?
Correct.
Any questions from the committee?
Jill, I just had a question on the exhibit, and I'm not sure if I got it. The project cost estimate as an exhibit to your budget transfer memo, is that right?
Yeah, Exhibit A.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond that is page 23, and you're showing the fiscal year 15-16 budget of $191,946. That's not the total budget. That's just the portion that's budgeted in 15-16?
Do you want to speak, Joanne? She knows a little bit more about that end of it.
Okay. Okay, from the unspent monies prior? Okay, thank you.
And so that must have meant that in 14-15 is when we actually purchased the equipment then. Okay. Karen, did you have a question?
Yes, please. Regarding the storage of equipment, so we said that there was a design delay, and so there was $57,000 and change to store the equipment that we were waiting to install?
That's correct. That's about, let's see. Actually, I'm not 100% sure on whether that $57,000 is entirely related to the storage. It may have to do with some of the design as well, that it cost more to design the project. We have some design overages along with, I think is what they're saying, design overages along with the storing of the equipment and the sales tax.
We have a volunteer over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes more sense to me. Okay.
Yeah. And the rest was designed,
well,
yeah.
Really anywhere, it seems like an awful lot.
They're quite large.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Opportunity for public comment. Hearing none, I'll bring it back to the committee for any motions.
I move approval of the budget transfer.
Second.
sorry. Go ahead, Ken.
I'll second that.
Motion from Mr. Waage and the second from Ms. Wright. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you. Let's see. Next item is the Habitat Conservation Plan update.
So Katie Drexage is one of our team members, and she wasn't here able to make it tonight, but myself and Doug Bird are also on the HCP project team. So what you see before you is sort of like a historical maps of what we've been doing since February, and we've made a lot of progress. Those of us on the project team are really happy with where we've headed and looking forward to moving this along. That being said, we plan to bring a proposed downstream release program to the Technical Advisory Committee in January. Once we go there, we will then take it on to the resource agencies, NOAA to be specific. And once we kind of round up with them and find out where, you know, what their kind of get their feedback on it, I anticipate maybe March or April we would be able to come back to the Zone 3 Advisory Committee and have our consultant, ECOR, give you a presentation. Do you have any questions about what's in the report?
I have a lot of questions, but I'll let the other committee members start.
Do I have to answer them all? Okay.
Actually, my question had to do with page 25, the water rights permit. It appears that, as it says here, during the meeting with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, or no, but the SWRCB.
State Water
Regional Control Board, okay. E-Corp discovered the district had two options to move forward with the water rights. And apparently we didn't keep our permit process moving along.
Doug Bird's here, and he would be happy to talk to you about a little bit of the history. It's not a simple thing, but he'll do his best.
I just get nervous when there's a permit that isn't all right.
Thank you, Jill. Doug Bird, Public Works staff. The original permit application was filed in 1958, and the permit was issued in 1961, and it remained valid up until I think in the 80s, and then it expired, and then we reapplied, and we've got another extension on it up until December 31st of 2001. This is something that we were not aware of at the staff level, and at this point in time, we've got some options. As ECOR found out in discussions with State Water Resources Control Board staff, we can actually petition for an extension of time on that particular permit, and that would allow us to proceed with what we need to do to rectify the issues related to the permit. And basically, there's one issue with the permit, and the permit that was originally approved allows the district to divert water to storage, and that's diverting water, holding it in a reservoir, holding it someplace, and not letting it pass through the dam for a period of greater than 30 days. There's also what we call direct diversion, where you take the water in, you divert it, and you hold it for less than 30 days, and then it goes on for whatever use, either downstream or through the pipeline to the water treatment plant. So what we're faced with right now is making a decision on how to proceed. We had that original permit, and then in 1991, we submitted a new application, and it was accepted by the state as being complete in 1998. This was intended to add 2,500 acre feet to the permit that we could use as water for direct diversion. In our recent discussions with state board staff, we've determined that the likelihood of us getting that additional 2,500 acre feet is minimal at best. It appears that most of the water in Arroyo Grande Creek is already subscribed to. So our other option is to go back to the original permit. That has some language in it. The way the application was set up, it was asked for and approved by the state to divert to storage up to 50,000 acre feet per annum. So what we can do is take a portion of that 50,000 acre feet from diversion to storage and convert it over to direct diversion. And that way we can keep our seniority water rights for the direct diversion. And I think we can get through the process a lot easier. Basically, the state staff are saying, look, everything you're doing is just fine, except you don't have direct diversion in your permit. So we need to correct that, and their guidance and their advice is to go ahead and file a petition to extend the permit and then correct the issues with the diversion to with the direct diversion, excuse me. It gets, I don't want to spend all night with this, but it gets into the whole question of the water that we divert, all the water that goes into Lopez Dam is considered the county's water unless we allow the water to go through the dam as a pass-through. So, and meaning that if you have 100 acre feet of water come into the dam on day one, and day two, you let that 100 acre feet go out, it can be considered to be flow throughs. It's not subject to, it hasn't been regulated by the county. And so that water then gets used downstream by our various ag users. Let's see, what's the best way to go with this? They can take their riparian share of the water, or if they use that all up, then they can take some of the water that's diverted as direct diversion water.
Maybe just try to get to the bottom line.
Sure.
What does it mean for the cities, the ag users? What's the net effect of all this?
Well, we're going
to change anything.
What there will be one big net effect, and that is that we have to factor in the amount of water that's used by the downstream users and add that to our permit. So if Mr. Akita and the other farmers are taking water, it's diversion of water that actually came under the control of the district. It's no longer the state's water, essentially. It's ours to deal with as we want, but then it has to be accounted for. So we'll have to take some of the water out of that 50,000 acre feet of storage water and shift it over to direct diversion water to compensate for whatever the ag users need. But as far as the agencies are concerned, your agencies, I don't see that it's going to have an impact. Other than when the reservoir initially filled, I'm not sure that we've had a season where we've captured 50,000 acre feet of water.
I guess the bottom line is it's business as usual. We have to clean up the permit to make it conform to what is actually happening, mm-hmm. and we need to get that permit renewed till whenever.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the reason why it's being covered in the HCP update is because my understanding is we will not get a new permit until the HCP has been developed and the resource agencies have signed off on the HCP and the new downstream release program.
Exactly.
Okay. And that scenario is not unique to Lopez as well. I know that my meetings in the past with the water rights staff up at State Water Board, they have a long list of open water rights permits, especially because of the changes in public trust doctrine and endangered species and everything. And they've been recently, in the last couple of years, really given the hard direction to get them done and get them cleaned up and, you know, get those files closed. So I know that that's why they've put more staff on the water rights side of stuff. and they're digging into these things in greater detail. And I'm
and to cap on top of that, some 5 or 6 years ago, I was in discussions with a representative from State Board, and she told me that if we could get the Habitat Conservation Plan settled to the point where National Marine Fisheries and U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Fish and Game were all happy with it, then all the complaints that were filed would go away, and they would review the HCP, and in fact, we could even avoid having to have a hearing or attend a hearing at State Board.
I mean, if I just finish up.
Sure.
So then would we get a temporary permit to continue operating until we get the final after the HCP and everything else is done?
What we do right now is we file a petition for extension of time.
Basically extend the existing until we can get everything cleaned up.
And then once we get all the information that we need, and we're going to be relying on our ag partners to help us out with finding out how much water gets diverted downstream of the dam, we'll need to have that to file a petition for change of use. And that will include all the points of diversion downstream of the dam. So if you've got, say, a well down at Chiquetti Road and you're pumping water out of that, we'll need to have the coordinates for that and also the pumpage amount. And I understand that there's going to be a meeting next month, according to Mr. Hutchinson, and I'm not sure if they've gotten the word out to everybody, but he said that they're scheduling a meeting to talk with our ag partners about how this works and what we're hoping everybody can do so we can get this all solidified and put together.
So I guess the bottom line is I was concerned also whether there'd be any additional conditions in the permitting. So whatever the HCP requires, we have to do that. But as far as the water board adding anything else, it doesn't sound like they will. The HCP and the sign-offs by the other regulators is adequate for them. They're not going to add additional permits to give us less water or something.
We have some additional forms to file with a petition for change of use. By pursuing the original permit and trying to get that extended instead of the application that was filed in 91, we avoid having to conduct a full water availability assessment. We have to do a hydrology report, which my understanding is that ECOR pretty much has all the data that they need for that already. So,
right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Doug, that was one of my questions. In the memo, in talking about the water rights permit, we concluded a while back that we needed a water availability analysis. Mm-hmm. And so we funded that, I think, through some additional funding mm-hmm. to the HCV project. And now it looks like that we don't need a water availability analysis, and instead we're proceeding with a hydrologic report. And I'm not sure what the difference between those two things would be.
According to ECOR, it's not that much. And, in fact, a lot of the data and the information that was pulled together for the water availability analysis is good for the hydrology report. So it's a good deal all the way around, I believe.
So my understanding is that on a water availability analysis, one of the first things that had to be done was a hydrology report in order to determine how much water the watershed could actually produce. Mm-hmm. And then in a water availability analysis, you have additional rigor in terms of identifying, you know, what are all the riparian rights and other permit rights.
How you divide it up.
Yeah. Right. So it's just, in just the hydrology report, it just is sort of deleting some of those other tasks.
Right. Yeah, it's just that we were chasing the water availability analysis, and now it looks like we don't have to go the whole distance on it, but we have to look at the other basis of it.
Yeah, and again, talking to the folks at ECOR, John, they indicated that at this juncture, it dovetails quite nicely, and I don't think we've gone beyond what would ordinarily be required just for the hydrology analysis.
So maybe we'll even have some budget savings? Maybe?
Sure. We'll have to ask our finance expert over here.
The other question I had was on the diversion, and you're mm-hmm. saying that we have to check with the ag folks about the water they're using and so forth and pumping. Mm-hmm. But we know how much water we're releasing from the dam. So is that not the same as the amount that we're talking about? Or is there a bifurcation of that downstream release into ag and some other purposes?
Yeah, the state wants to have statements of use filed. And that an individual or firm that has a well on the creek needs to provide the state with the coordinates and the amounts of water that are being pumped. Now, where that comes back to us as the district, as the flood control district, is as I mentioned before, once the water goes into that reservoir, unless we allow it to flow through in a fairly rapid manner, like within a few days of its inflow, it's considered to be regulated by the district. So then when we put water into the creek and Mr. Akita or somebody else, Mr. Doe or whomever, takes water out of the creek, they are either diverting the water, and that would be diversion if we just allow the water to flow through, or if we divert it and hold it for a period of time and release it, then they're doing what's called a rediversion. And it's a rediversion of our water, the water that we regulated or impaired. So we have to include all of that information in the new permit.
Well, that certainly opens up another whole host of questions then, right? Because, and I mean, literally, I hope put a whole bunch of questions together relating to the new downstream release program, not to be answered tonight, but when it actually comes back for presentation, and I'll get to those in a little while. Sure. Are you saying then that the state would expect the county flood control district to regulate how much Mr. Akita might be pumping?
No. They're hopeful, as are we,
yes,
that we can get a cooperative working relationship together and that the folks along the creek system that are pumping out of that will file their statements of use, and without having gotten into deep discussions with management staff on this, it would be my thought that the district would request that when the ag users file their statements of use, that we be provided with a copy of those. And then that would allow us to have the specific information that the state wants. The other thing that I noticed in looking at where all the statements of use are, we had an analysis done a couple of years ago, and not everybody along Arroyo Grande Creek has filed statements of use with the state. And a number of those, I've got some ideas on where they it looks like between Big Canyon Court on the south side of Lopez Drive to up going toward the dam to Villa dos Ranchos, all those properties in there where the ag producers are have filed statements of use. But between the one point, Villa dos Ranchos, between there and the dam, there's no statements of use that we're aware of.
And to me, it seems like it begs a bit of a challenge for agriculture, because if they're pumping, are they really diverting or rediverting creek flows, or are they pumping groundwater?
Right, and whether or not they have riparian rights. And that's part of the puzzle. And the riparian rights, the best way to determine would be to look at unimpaired flows, historical unimpaired flows, prior to construction of the dam.
Well, that was my question, Doug, was you could visualize that some of the pumping will be groundwater, some of it would be riparian water.
Mm-hmm.
So whose task would it be to separate those two sources so that you get more or less a clear picture on the diversion?
That's what we're going to be working on.
Okay. Well, final question here.
It makes me wonder about retirement.
Why are we doing this?
Well, it is kind of on the why are we doing this, because we know since Lopez has been constructed, the actual operations have been working very well.
Right.
And so a bit of it is an academic exercise of incorporating information into a new water rights permit.
Exactly. And so one of the backing up to the business about the 50,000 acre feet that we divert to storage, or we have the right to divert to storage every year. If we take a little bit off the top, say 5 or 6,000 acre feet, depending on how our analysis of downstream user consumption goes, then that will set us right with the state, and we should be able to cover all of our uses.
One final question, Doug, is on the first sheet of that, on page 24 at the bottom. It's a pretty dramatic statement when it's said that ECOR presented a downstream release program to the district staff, which addressed comments from October. It was agreed by district staff, ECOR, and H.T. Harvey that this program would meet all requirements for M&I needs, downstream demand for growers, and enhance habitat for listed species. So this, to me, says that the analysis shows that everything will be okay, as stated here.
Mm-hmm. But it makes you wonder if everything is going to be okay.
Yeah.
I said that's a pretty ambitious statement.
So, yes, it is.
And I read another statement in there, which, not that it contradicted, but it seemed to a little bit, which is the downstream release program may trigger the low reservoir response plan more frequently than historic release practices, which means that if we have a drawdown in the reservoir, or if it gets drawn down more frequently than historically, then do we have more risks when the droughts actually come? But I'm foreshadowing some of my other questions, so I'll see if any other committee members have questions first. So what I did is I decided to spend a little bit of time today in looking at this and recognizing that I have had a little bit of history with this particular project, and just sort of did a little bit of brainstorming by myself, with the idea being is that when this actually comes back to the committee for a detailed presentation, what type of information might be most meaningful for the advisory committee? Clearly I think that we can see this year we've had really good progress on this work, and the technical advisory committee is very much engaged in the technical details. So, Doug, I'm not expecting that these questions be answered tonight. In fact, I think we're moving at a pretty good clip today, so I don't want to really belabor this item prior to. But that one statement that I read that, you know, we could have lower reservoir levels that more frequently triggered the LRRP, you know, really stuck in my mind. And part of it also was that I was involved when Monterey County was implementing their revised operating plan at Lake Nacimiento. So this is a revised operating plan as well. And so part of my own, you know, brainstorming by myself was reflecting on the presentations that Monterey County did. And I know that some of this stuff is already in the work product, but the very first thing is modeling against historic operations in a line graph, where when it comes back, just having that real basic presentation that says, historically, these were the lake level elevations, and underneath the new downstream release program, the DRP, that this is what the lake level would have been for history. To me, that's a really clear and understanding snapshot of how the revised downstream release program would change lake levels, and it gets to that point that we might trigger the LRRP more often. And I know that that's pretty standard, so look forward to that. The second question really is, how does this affect our drought resiliency? And resiliency seems to be the new buzzword of the State Water Board and DWR and those, so I'm using it. But the thought was that we've now had two major droughts since Lopez is constructed, and we're in the middle of the current one. So looking at how the downstream release program, where we would be today if it had been previously illustrated, that's going to take into account existing demand scenarios. But the drought in the late 1980s and the early 1990s had different demand scenarios. So if we had the current demand and the DRP back in the last drought, what would lake levels have looked like? And to me, it still begs the question, was that a worse drought? We just didn't have enough as much demand? Or is this a worse drought? because they had different durations and different intensities. You know, clearly the last couple of years has been some of the driest on record, but the prior drought still had, you know, a long duration. So I think doing a little bit of drought resiliency evaluation and saying what kind of, you know, does it increase our risks when we trigger the LRRP more often? There's also a statement in there that says that we might want to modify the trigger level of the LRRP, and that one seemed counterintuitive to me, so I'd be looking for an explanation on that, because if we're drawing down the reservoir a little bit more, if we're going to trigger that LRRP more often, and if we have a little bit more risk during the drought, then it would seem like we would want to stick with the LRRP to be able to manage ourselves through drought. So I'm sure that there's some technical evaluation associated with that comment of maybe modifying the LRRP, but I'd like to see that specifically addressed. Question number three is one that I've always been concerned with since the 1990s, and that is that will the AHS, where the Habitat Conservation Plan and revised DRP, is that going to affect our surplus water at all? Intuitively, if we're making more downstream releases, then there would be less water available for surplus water, at least in comparison to historical conditions. So just like the line graph that says these were historic lake levels and this is what they would have been underneath the downstream release program, question three kind of gets the issue of how much surplus water did we have historically, and would that have been reduced underneath the new downstream release program? Question four is the question that we were sort of touching on a little bit a second ago, which is how will it affect groundwater recharge? Because presumably with increased deliveries or downstream releases, we're still going to not want to see that water going all the way out to the ocean. And so if it has increased recharge, then who gets the right to pump that additional recharge? Is it the municipalities? And I know that during the adjudication process, some of the experts had testified as to the additional recharge that Lopez was contributing to the groundwater basin since it was constructed. So I know that some evaluation has been done on that point. But again, is there additional pumping rights that municipalities might have because of the additional recharge? And that really kind of points to the question of 4C, or the point, which is the need for a groundwater model that includes recharge of Lopez. I think my sentence there probably gets a little bit confusing. And we've been having the separate discussions about developing a groundwater model with cooperation between NCMA and MMA and the county. And I know that NCMA just provided some feedback to the county on cost sharings, and hopefully that will move forward. And my thought on this 4C then is that Zone 3 really has a role in that groundwater model as well, because it's sort of the watershed analysis and how much recharge is being contributed from Arroyo Grande Creek, especially because of the downstream release program. The rest of the questions then may not be as germane to the HCP, but related to other issues. So anything as significant as the HCP and modifications to the downstream release program and a new water rights permit will likely have some domino effects in other areas. So how is it going to be evaluated in the context of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act? And Mr. Hutchinson at previous meetings had indicated that County Public Works was giving serious thought of, and it might even be in the staff report, about using the HCP as the basis of addressing SGMA compliance. And so what's the relationship there? How does the new DRP affect the adjudication? What's needed for CEQA? And then lastly, what contract modifications should be considered to mitigate any impact on municipal deliveries? And it might be, if the quote that Mr. Wallace was reading, might be that, hey, the impacts are negligible, and so these questions, you know, we don't really need to worry about them. But what I wanted to do was to start putting out some questions so that when a presentation comes back to us, it addresses these particular points, and I didn't really see the need to sort of belabor them on today, but I want to put them in writing so that we could all bring them back to whoever our reps are on TAC and say, you know, usually if I have 8 questions down on paper, 6 of them are good, and then the other 2 people tell me that, you know, I need to do some more homework. But I wanted to sort of encourage the dialogue between the advisory committee and, you know, for the elected officials, your staff, so that when it does come back to the advisory committee, the presentation is really focused in on, you know, meaningful issues for this committee, recognizing that the technical advisory committee has really scoured through a lot of those technical details. So that's my input.
Thank you.
I just had a comment. These are really good questions. You're also motivating the staff to make sure the downstream release program doesn't change much.
Yeah. Because,
otherwise, they have all this homework.
A lot more questions to answer.
Yeah. I would be particularly interested in Doug or the staff's response, maybe at the next meeting or whatever, about that last item on Katie's memo that says, this program would meet all requirements for M&I needs, downstream release for growers, and enhanced habitat. So it sounds like everybody's saying this is really going to make it good. So it seems like an overstatement at this point in time.
Yeah, my concern has always been about the surplus water. And so if her statement of need there is based on our entitlement allocations but not surplus water, then that's a big big hole to close, I guess, yeah. Any other questions, Mr. Gehring?
Oh, just a couple of comments. You know, it does seem that we've been much more resilient in the face of this current drought because of the existence of surplus water in the past. So without that, we wouldn't have that resiliency. So that's a really important question. And if the LRRP is going to be triggered more often, it also would seem that we're getting less water for both the downstream municipalities and so on. That needs to be investigated. The other thing is just a comment that in the original water rights permit, they do have a list of downstream diverters, but they don't give quantities. So it's not an unusual requirement that they would ask for that, but they've added the requirement for quantities, I guess.
I believe it's level of flows, yes, maximum flow rate. And
Not acre footage.
Well, they do want the statements of use that they get filed with the state ask for the number of acre feet that are used on a month-by-month basis throughout each calendar year. Yeah. And as they reminded us, the original permit application and the permit itself both identified that a majority or a large portion, at least, of the water that was going to be captured by the reservoir was for irrigation use. So it's I think the actual initial application identified something like 25,000 or 26,000 acres to be irrigated through water generated from the project.
The original application, I mean, if you read it, it gives the district a wide range of options as to what it's going to do with the water and how it's going to distribute.
Right, exactly.
Well, hearing no further questions.
Just a comment. This is under the item, action items. Do you need a receive and file motion here, or just receive and file, no motion, no action? It's under an action item. I wasn't sure what staff wanted to do with this.
Yeah, it struck me that this was more of an informational item, even though we know that there will be some sort of Board of Supervisors action in the future. Mm-hmm. So I didn't see the need for any action.
Don't either. I'm just curious if we needed to. It didn't look like it. Right. Thank you.
And to clarify, is it the March meeting then that is being targeted for a presentation on this to us?
I'm not sure. Jill?
Without having taken this proposed downstream release program to NOAA, that's the big question. But we can target March or April.
Okay.
It'll really depend on them.
March or May for us.
Correct.
March or May.
There you go.
Okay. That sounds good. I was just trying to, in my own mind, think about you know, our first couple meetings in 2016. And so if the January meeting, our focus is going to be on the Diablo project, then March or May would seem to make sense for follow-up on a good presentation on this particular item.
I agree.
I had a question, Bob. Was E-Corp, did they meet their deadlines?
I believe they one of their deadlines was supposed to be October, but so we did not meet that. But that we've made good progress. I believe their original, I can't quite remember, but I believe one of their things is we thought that they were going to be done with the whole thing by the end of October, which it seemed was a little bit
close,
aggressive.
Very impressive, actually. And, when they presented it here, I think we all kind of rolled our eyes because it just didn't seem possible, but they're pretty close, I think. They did it.
Yeah, that's what my thoughts were, because it just seemed like really good progress has been made, and then my head went to, what's this really going to mean? And that's why I started thinking about some questions and everything. But certainly it seems like it's been moving forward pretty well this year.
Yeah, we're really pleased with that. They've been very responsive and very agreeable to looking at what our feedback as well. When we come back to them and say, well, what about this, what about that? They've been right on it, and been great working with them.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jill. Moving along to action items, emergency water supply options evaluation letter update. I'm not sure if anybody's going to speak to that one. Thank you.
Mark Hutchinson was not able to be here, and he would have presented this. So he basically put what he would have said down in writing before you. I believe that the study session that was sort of requested by this group is going to, he's going to bring that up as part of the larger discussion on January 26th. So with the desal project, because one of the items in long-term drought is the desal, so it's a good way to tie the two things together.
It certainly seems to make sense to me that if the Board of Supervisors is going to be talking about desal in January, that there's also some discussion on what the other water supply options are for South County. I'm not sure if Mr. English has had a chance to follow up with Mark at all, because I think that what we were intending to do is to make sure that we had some sort of coordination with Public Works on that presentation to the Board of Supervisors. So hopefully we'll have that opportunity as well. And again, if hi, Jeff.
Chairman Ogren, I have had no communication with Mark to date. I was actually waiting for them to reach out to us with some kind of a invitation to initiate that discussion, but I will, as a result of this conversation, reach out to Mark next week.
Super. And I know you had a couple others, including myself, who were working with you on that effort, so I'd be glad to also follow up. And yeah, I think this memo from Mark is the invitation.
Yes.
Good. Thanks, Jeff. Any questions from the committee or comments? Seeing none, and opportunity again for public comment. Moving on to future agenda items. I know that on 11A, contract renegotiation discussions, we've had some discussions at staff level, and so we're in a good position for the Zone 3 participating agencies to get together in the near future. But that ball is sort of in our court as opposed to the county's court. I'm not sure that water wheeling is going to be as applicable anymore. I know that that question had come up relating to drought deliveries and state water, but we've addressed a lot of the state water issues. with the board's action in September on the reallocation of 2014. So maybe what we'll do is have a little bit of discussion at the TAC level and see if water wheeling is really needed for a future agenda item. But I know 11C, funding of the groundwater modeling, is something that has had recent correspondence on, and a number of the agencies through NCMA have given the county feedback on that. So I would look forward to seeing how that particular work effort moves forward, and would anticipate that in one of our meetings at the first half of 2016, we would have some forward progress on that. Other than that, I'm not sure if there's any other questions or comments. Item 12, committee member comments overall. And
I have a few. Just briefly, I pulled off the internet Governor Brown's executive order calling for additional drought actions. And I gather that what he's saying is he's given direction to the Water Board that the Water Board shall look at where we stand as of October and in 2016, and if we're still in a drought, then he's asking the Water Board to impose even more stringent regulations with respect to reducing our water supply. So he's given that order to the Water Board, and I guess that will be happening. So just to let everybody know about that. And then?
I have a committee member comment, because my understanding is that it is your last meeting here, Mr. Wallace, on the Zone 3 Advisory Committee?
That's correct, and I just wanted to share a few comments with everybody about that. It's been a real pleasure to have served for 21 years and participating on this committee in one form or the other. Originally having been appointed by the city of Aroy Grande when I was working with the city, and then later on with AVLA, and specifically being appointed by the Board of Supervisors as part of the CSA 12 representation. It's been a real transition over the years from where I saw the committee and the staff and the district really going with big projects. We've had the dam remediation project. We've had the reconstruction of the water treatment plant. And I think just those two projects alone were, what, $50 million bucks?
$60
million. We've had a lot of other projects, like the pigging of some of the Lopez line to increase the capacity, specifically to Oceano and others. And we've considered the governance of this committee. And one of the hot items for a long time was whether or not this should be an independent district, independent of the county or not. And I think that's kind of shifted back to focus on it's in its correct format, in its format now, it's doing a good job. And then finally, over the last 10 or 12 years, we've been talking about the HCP. So one of these days, I'll read in the paper that the HCP was adopted and NIMS is all fine with it and we're on our way. But I really appreciate the opportunity. Since I no longer hold an official position in CSA 12, I think it's appropriate that we make way for additional or an alternate representation, and that will probably happen in January, I believe, at the Board of Supervisors. So I'd like to thank the staff and thank everybody else for putting up with all my questions over the years.
John, how about an attack? Are you going to stay on the TAC?
Well, I'm talking to AVLA about that, and it perhaps we'll see. I'd like to do that because, obviously, I'd like to stay involved in that and contribute whatever technical information we can to the discussions there.
I think it'd be a good idea. We need history there. You know, we need the guys like you and Jim who have been with it, and yeah. You can keep us from making the same mistakes twice.
Well, I don't know about that, but... You're right.
You guys are a wealth of knowledge, seriously. Walking encyclopedia of the whole Zone 3, really.
Well, Jim and I share a common goal and a passion, I think, about our participation on the tack and being able to contribute where we can. And like Jim tonight brought a copy of the original water rights permit, and you don't have that very often with those kinds of things at your fingertips. And so hopefully I can continue to contribute there to tack.
Well, John, thanks for your input over the years. It's been really valuable.
Thanks, Jim.
Just wanted to add my thanks, too. I agree with the continuity need. I would hope you could continue in some capacity, perhaps, on the TAC, because these issues are complex, and we come upon, if you're new to this board, you're learning how things work, and you're kind of getting up to speed, but a lot of these things have an historical context to make good decisions, and we need that historical context, and you and Jim have that. I know Pablo does, too, but...
He's
the young guy. I know he's brand new in terms of your history, but no, I appreciate all the effort to your passion to try to help make sure we're getting things right. This is going to be even more challenging as we move on.
Right, for sure.
So I think it's even more important to have that experience guiding our direction.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate it.
And I certainly want to ditto those. I think, Jim, that means that you have to be at least obligated for another 5 years, right? Mr. Wallace is walking away. Yeah. But, you know, your expertise and also your mentoring, John. You know, over the years, you know, obviously I've been involved in different sort of capacities and stuff, and all it seems like year after year something comes up and we have a chance to talk. And, you know, expertise is one thing, and the second thing is mentoring, and I really appreciate that over the years as well.
You're buying the next cup of coffee, huh?
So I wanted to thank John also, because 30 years ago he hired me as an intern at the County Public Works Department while I was still a college student, and I'm still there. So thank you, John, for inspiring me to stay with public service.
You were a keeper.
You didn't know it at the time.
Yeah, both of them, maybe. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Well, with that, then, our meeting is adjourned.
See you next year?
Yeah. See you in 2016. Thanks.